And good evening. It's Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And this evening, we have our guest, Tracy McBurney. And I'm very excited to have you here because I've heard so much about you and I've only met you, you know, a couple times. But welcome, Tracy.
Thank you.
Uh-oh.
Expectation.
Oh, no expectations. None at all. I wouldn't do that to you. Well, typically on our show, we like to start off with our journey. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are, and then we'll talk about all the different things you do, because you do a lot.
Well, you asked me that earlier, and I said, okay, well, we could start with the hospital I was born at. Okay, well, first off, I work here in Toronto. I work as a teacher, and I work as an energy medicine practitioner and nutritionist.
Right.
I have an office here. And how did that journey begin? I transitioned out of a career in the restaurant industry about 12 years ago. And that began because it had to begin. That was really a time of rite of passage for me. There was a lot that went on at that time. I found my way into a vortex.
So were you in nutrition? Like, were you doing?
No. Oh, okay. I was still working in the restaurant industry at this time, but I was dabbling in opening up to these invisible worlds and meeting some very interesting people through a series of coincidences. And I found my way into this vortex that is in Halton Hills, very powerful place where electromagnetic energy comes up from the earth. And the North American Indians would say you don't do stuff like that without preparing for that journey. And the North American Indians and certain traditions, Indian traditions, would say, and you don't do that unless you're a man.
Mm.
And of course, neither one of those sat well with me. And off I went. Defied the instruction and the warnings and walked there. Thinking, I guess, in my arrogance that I'd done my work. I'd cleared myself up. There was nothing really that I needed to see that I didn't already know, and off I went. And the end result was, it was kind of like being hit by lightning. Mm. And I remember walking out of that experience when I couldn't feel the ground at my feet anymore, and I said to the person that I was with, "Don't you feel like you're walking on marshmallows? I'm not even walking on the ground." And he was standing with me, clearly not having the same experience. And I know now, because he was not as open to having that experience as I was. It was me just going, "Come, lightning, hit me." And I remember saying to him when we walked out of that forest, "I think I've done a really bad thing. I can hear sparking in my head." And they do say in those warnings that if you make it out of one of those experiences and you live through it, it could actually create insanity.
Sure.
Or it creates the initiation process from boy to man. So it's kind of a rite of passage. And I made it out of that experience, and somehow I made it out of the insanity. And out of all of that and the insanity came some gifts of clairaudience and clairascension that I make use of in my office. But it was a pretty rocky road for a while to come to the other side of that. And now I do more of the using of those gifts in my office and the trying to help people to get at what is at the root of the disturbance in their force, the wrong decisions that they're making, the way that they're creating their life that isn't working, that goes beyond here's the B vitamin, or here's the food that you need to get out of your diet, or here's all the rules and regulations for the following of that diet and the taking of those supplements. And I think I found very, very much at the beginning of my journey as what might be called the traditional nutritionist, holistic nutritionist, that it wasn't very satisfying for me. It wasn't very satisfying for me because I don't think it was making use of my gifts, and I don't think it was honoring what excites me. Mm-hmm. And what excites me is getting into how people's minds work. And that's kind of where I was at 7 years old. When I was sitting with my mother in the kitchen, making her so uncomfortable because I wanted to know how the minds of those murderers who had killed their wives worked. And I really wanted to know how they worked. I couldn't understand a man that would want to kill his wife. And at that time, it was the Colin Thatcher Demeter trials, and I was following both of them, and to great disturbance of my mother. And in fact, I remember saying to her at one point how dissatisfied I was with the newspaper articles because they weren't giving me what I was looking for. I wanted to know why those men did what they did and how their minds worked. And I remember saying to her, "Mom, I want to go and meet them."
Oh.
And my mother was so disturbed by that thought. She just looked at me. I remember looking at her face, and I said, "Mom, it's okay. There'll be glass between us." And the look on her face, I think, was what told me I'd crossed some line that had become a great threat to her, and I needed to somehow hide now. And that wasn't going to be now, and it wasn't time now, and it wasn't the right partnership now. And so when I got the nutrition designation, which happened after the Vortex experience, when I was coming out of all of that mess of insanity and changing my career, when I got that designation and hung up my shingle and brought those clients in, and maybe it was 6 or 8 months later that I was like, "I'm not liking this," because I really was more interested in why that person was eating a row of cookies. Aren't you interested in the why you're eating that row of cookies? Can't we get into your mind and your brain and figure out the programming of that? Don't you want to know that? Do you want to just keep taking all those pills and following all those rules? Couldn't we just go and rewire that? And so,
you mean there's a way of stopping yourself from eating the whole box of cookies?
Yes. Really? And there's a way of understanding why you do what you do. Now, that is not minimizing that a lot of people out there that eat a row of cookies have a real physical thyroid issue that creates binge eating. And it's not to minimize the value of saying, "Hey, as the nutritionist, I know that supplementing with iodine of some sort, seaweed of some sort, desiccated thyroid hormone or something that fortifies that thyroid would be a really good idea." But at the end of the day, the operating system for why you can't stop eating something that's that sweet is still operating within you. And so if you just cover it with this, you never really get to see why you do some of the things that you do and why you operate the way you operate and why when things are imbalanced, what is at the root of that destructive behavior? Because at the end of the day, we are creative beings, and we are also destructive beings. We have both of those things inside of us, and they operate inside of us 24 hours a day. We have the opportunity to say, "Hey, do I want to be creative today and grow today, or do I want to destroy today? Do I want to be destructive to myself, my boyfriend, my relationship? Do I want to blow up my career? Or do I want to do something that makes a positive, wonderful, amazing difference in this world today?" We have that choice. We always have that choice. And we have that choice when we eat, and we have that choice in relationships, and it's always there, it's always available, but we like to call it light and dark. We like to judge that dark. We like to say, "Oh, we don't really have anything to do with her. She's kind of dark," right? Like, oh, you know, hello.
Yeah.
This God force, if I would call it then a God force, has both the growth and the destructive mode operating every day. We see the worms in the earth. We see the bacteria under the microscope that is in that earth, and that is the destructive force of that God working. But it's just so much nicer to look at the flower and say, "Oh, isn't that beautiful?" But to accept that they both don't work together is kind of our ignorance. And to accept that they are separate and that we need to stop being one, and that we shouldn't be that, and that force should never be operating, is to deny that that force is exactly what you would want to need and what you would need if you were there as a mother wanting to protect your child in that instant. You'd want to have that available to you, but you want to have the spiritual self-control to be able to decide No, I'm not going to use that destructive force. I don't need to. No, I can stop at 2 cookies. I don't need to destroy myself by eating the row or the bag. I have power over this friend called my darkness. I have that power, but I don't deny that it's there.
Right.
Right? And I don't pretend that it's not. Right? So I started more and more in my career to actually do that, to actually ask those questions. And people were very interested. I used to say, you know, we're coming out of the cupboard. We're coming out of the cupboard, and I used to like to go to people's houses and pull things out of the cupboards. And then I wanted to pull things out of the cupboards, and then I wanted to show them that the reason why they'd come to me that day to talk to me about their relationship with food is because that's the relationship that they could notice. That's the relationship that was in their consciousness. That's the relationship that was right there. And they could admit it. And it's the one that although it might have embarrassed them, it was the one that they could see and maybe didn't embarrass them as much or didn't have as much shame attached to it as another relationship that they didn't want to talk about today. So what I was able to show them over and over again, these lovely people that are my clients, these blessings, is that your relationship with your food is your relationship with yourself, is your relationship with your colleagues, is your relationship with your boss that you're having a problem with. They're all the same. They're all the same. If you sort the one out with your food and if you can get to the operating system of why you eat the cookies, the row of cookies, and you do not stop, and why you go into destructive mode in your relationship with food, meaning in your relationship with yourself, if you can get to the root of that, then you've gotten to the root of why you've done that in your relationship with your boss and you won't do it anymore. Or in your relationship with your husband, so you won't do it anymore. And I remember pointing that out to a gentleman who came, and he came, this would have been 4 or 5 years ago, and he came from Bay Street. And I was considered at that time, probably still am a little bit, this secret on Bay Street, the guys in the three-piece suits, because I'm really quite not like that. And it's like they would just kind of whisper, if you want to kind of figure out why you just lost that $1 million 3 times this year, go see her. She'll tell you what's going on in your head that's creating that so that you can stop that experience from happening and change what's going on, kind of shh. And so I remember this gentleman coming, and we had a wonderful session. He was in my office for about 2.5 hours. And the relationship that he wanted to improve was his relationship with his money, his relationship with finances, his relationship with his work. And so we worked, and we got really inside what was going on inside of him. And when we finished that session, you could just see his eyes were just kind of wide open. It was just like he got it. And he looked at me and just really quietly, almost in a whisper, he said, "That's the same thing that's been going on with my wife."
Mm.
And I said, "Uh-huh." And I said, "And it's the same thing that's been going on with you internally, nothing to do with money." He came in to do 3 or 4 more sessions after that point that had nothing to do with money because something just shifted in his world. But again, it's like, how are you going to see the dysfunction of your world, you as creator? Is it going to be through cookies? Is it going to be through money? Is it going to be through your relationship with your husband as he walks out the door to pursue another woman? You know, how are you going to see what it is that's going on inside of you that you are creating your life by? So that is my passion now.
Mm-hmm.
And
clearly.
Yeah, and I love what I do, and I teach it. I teach it in energy medicine classes here at the Institute of Holistic Nutrition in both their locations in Mississauga and Toronto. And it is a passion, how to help people to change how they're thinking, how to accept, how to teach people to accept that they are the creator of their reality. And no matter whether they believe that or not, see, that's the kick, right? That's the law of attraction. That's the secret, right? That was one of the messages of that movie, The Secret, and that book, The Secret. It doesn't matter if you believe it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you believe it. It's happening anyway. whether you believe it or not. So your ignorance is no defense. And your ignorance actually works against you a little bit.
A little bit.
So it's the same concept. It's not about whether you believe it or whether you don't believe it. The fact is, if you don't believe that you are the creator of your reality, then you miss out having much more control over how your life shows up and how you show up in that life.
Yeah.
And I like that concept, like how your life shows up. Rather than I walk around blaming everybody for how my life is showing up or how they are showing up in my life, not really realizing I am the creator. I am the playwright. I am the person that is writing this play, and all of these lovely people have shown up in costume to play the villains, to play the murderers, to play the abusers. They've all shown up on the stage, both light and dark, for me. So I can observe me. So I can observe my pain. So I can observe my beliefs. So I can observe my old decisions that I have not changed. So I can observe me. They are my mirrors.
It's funny how we got into that topic.
Yeah, isn't it funny?
Yeah. We were just discussing how that was one of the things we were going to talk about, and here it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here it is.
Here it is.
Because I think it's supposed to be here.
Uh-huh.
So that concept of mirrors is kind of an interesting one, because if you don't get it, then you feel like a victim.
Yeah.
If you don't get it, you don't feel like you have power. And if you don't get it, then you don't feel like you're in control. So I want to digress away from that for a second. So anyway, that's the story of me and how I'm here.
Cool.
And how I'm here and why I do what I do. And so it is the 7-year-old child sitting in the kitchen with her mother who has returned as the 45-year-old woman going, okay, I guess it's time. I guess now I can be in partnership with the people who really want to go and look at these things. So it's a kick. I really quite like it. So when you called or emailed and said, you know, can we do this? And I thought about it. I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to say? How am I going to fill up this space? And you also said, you know, I'd like to see if we could figure out how to make it relevant to what's going on here in 2009, what your thoughts are on that. And this time, 2008, 2009, actually starting in 2007, 2006. It's just an interesting time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about it, and I thought, well, out of my office and out of my teachings and out of the energy medicine class, the psychology of disease class, what are the pearls that I could bring? Like, what are the gifts? What are the teachings? What are the things that I think would be pertinent to share that wouldn't take hours of classroom space to get somebody to kind of understand that would be pertinent to now? So the way I see it, this is a very powerful time of change. Change for the planet, change for all of us, change for our consciousness, change for the mass consciousness. It's a huge time of change. In my personal opinion, I don't think we're going back ever mm-hmm. to where we were at all. I don't think it's returning there at all. I was happy to see Obama actually create a speech that said exactly that, that people needed to get their head wrapped around that, that there is no returning to what we knew in the past. And so it's this concept of change. Change riles people. Fear of change is a big change. One of the things I have specialized in the past and still do is allergy, and one of the things I know is that an allergy is, and Chinese medicine would say this too, is an energy block in the system. And the energy block in the system is always created by conflict and fear. It's never created by love. And what I happen to know about change and people's fear of change is it actually creates an allergy to dust.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Which I think is actually quite funny. And yeah. I also think
ironic.
That, you know, lots of people are allergic to dust mm-hmm. and have different degrees of that allergy. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out. So now I say, okay, well, change. How do we change? Because the earth is changing. And we've got to come along for the ride with this. We can't stop it. We can't stagnate. We are changing too. And so, when do we change? When do we actually get up that day and say, okay, I'm ready to change? What is standing in the way for us, for humans, for the human consciousness and the mind and how it operates? What's standing in the way of change? And so to me, when I teach it in a class, because I think it's very important for nutritionists and therapists to understand why people aren't changing, what's standing in the way of them changing, and to be able to really put directed attention to those places. So when you break it down in a mind level, it's actually quite simple. We don't change until we know that we have the power within us to do that. Until something has happened that says to us, I can do that. I am capable. I am capable. I have the tools. I have the strength. Until something resonates inside of us that says that. Even if it's that we are grabbing on now to a new mate. And in grabbing on to the new mate and joining forces with that new mate, we are now saying to ourselves, now I have the power. Because I now have this new relationship, I have the power and I have the strength to move forward in this way. So until that change happens, until the universe converges and until your angels and guides set things up to create the situations by which you can finally say, yeah, I'm capable, I have the tools, I have the people in place, I'm good, I'm good, I can go, I'm good to go.
Look, he's right beside me. Yeah, I'm good to go.
So there's power.
Right.
However that is achieved, there is a knowledge and a knowing inside internally of power. The next one is desire. Mm. When we have found the desire from within us and know that the desire is there, we can change. And how we achieve that and the ways that your angels and guides and those in the invisible world help you and you help you to achieve that is endless. So examples being that I've seen in my office, cancer can facilitate this desire to change. Serious illness or disease, an accident can facilitate that desire to change. A near-death experience, a new love in my life, and now I'm inspired to change. Now I have the desire to change. I couldn't find the desire within me to change for myself, but he's there. I'm going to change for him. That one can be a little dangerous.
Yeah, that's a hard one, yeah.
As long as we find a new desire at a different time, but, you know, your angels and guides will work with what they can work with to push you in the directions that you are to go, and really it's not for us to judge. The death of a loved one. Too much pain, too much suffering. That's a big one, actually. That's a neat one. I see that in my office a lot. I call it, oh, you've come to your enough is enough moment. When the pain and suffering has become too much, it's beyond what you had designed for yourself. It's beyond what you felt internally was right or what you deserved or what you were entitled to. And the moment it went beyond that place, you went, that's enough. And now you find the desire. The third one had eluded me for a very long time. So teaching for 4 or 5 or 6 years in psychology of disease, those were the two that I taught, power and desire. And they seemed to be enough, and people would shift and shift and shift. But I knew, because something wasn't shifting in me, that I was missing something. And I found it this year at Christmas time, when I was out searching at Barnes & Noble's when I was in California. And I found it in a book called Stuck. And what I found was the word courage. Her whole book, and again, you're probably going to ask me the author's name, and it's out of my head. It's a wonderful book, though. White cover, I can picture it now. Bumblebee on the front, Stuck, if you're looking for it in the bookstores. It was simply to find in that book the word that I needed that would bring forth what I needed to understand and the counsel from my guidance, and it was the word courage. So the thought being that when we succeed at finding courage to take the risk, then we move forward. But until we find that courage to take that risk, we can have all the power and all the desire. But if the courage is absent, we stand and do nothing. Mm-hmm. So it was that courage word that was the word that I needed, but it wasn't the final answer. So what came after that is courage is only required and used in this way when the feeling of inner security is absent from within us, when we don't know that anymore. And what does that mean, the feeling of inner security? When I say it to clients and when I describe it to classrooms, I say it's that feeling inside that says, I will be okay no matter what happens. No matter what happens, I will be okay.
That's faith, isn't it?
And I will make it through. So yes, so is inner security tied to this thing called faith?
Or trust.
And trust, absolutely. And isn't it interesting that you say these words, because faith and trust and courage all reside and turn on thymus.
Mm.
They bring the thymus to a state of light. They bring the thymus out of a darkened kind of failed or destructive state. So it's interesting that you bring out those two words. So then I think, well, when we've accepted that we will never again know this inner security, if when something happens in our world and we now have come to accept that in our consciousness, subconscious, unconscious, conscious mind, or we've accepted that we're not foolish enough to live that way anymore, that way of having that thing called inner security, because we had it once and look what happened. So I'm not that stupid fool again that's going there. We lock ourselves in a struggle to find in no courage. For now we're going to go to battle again because it's the only way out. Courage becomes the only way out because inner security is no longer there, and it's no longer the answer, and it's no longer the thing that we're searching for. It's kind of like the impossible dream that we won't let ourselves have again, or that we don't believe we can ever have again because it was taken from that, from us. So then I asked the question. I'm always looking up. I asked.
Yes, for those who are listening on the radio, she looks up with her hands up.
And of course, I'm always doing that. I'm always looking up and asking. So what's caused this absence of inner security? This absence of inner stability, or this absence of inner groundedness, or as you so aptly say, what has caused this absence of inner faith? Of inner faith that everything is going to be okay no matter what happens. And the answer comes back quietly, softly. The answer comes back, the trauma, the shock, the pain, the wound, the hurt of a trespass. Mm. Of a trespass against us, unforgiven, unreconciled, unhealed, still operating in the consciousness of us, still defining our choices, still running our lives, still eating at us from one lifetime to the other. And so for people, classrooms, because I teach lots of people, lots of different denominations, for people that don't believe in past lives, I happen to, I'll own that, but for people that don't, that's all right. Mm-hmm. So then I say, hey, you know what? Is it beyond your level of rational thinking to think that you might be affected by a wound or a trespass? Or something that happened to a grandmother or a great-grandmother that lived on your mother's side of the family, that you might be affected by the fact that she never healed that, by the fact that she raged at her husband and her children and blamed and lashed out, and that her children might have been affected by that blame and that lashing out. And now you are being affected. So that you are being affected by past lives. Lives lived before this one that you're living now.
Hmm. That's a good way of getting around it.
I try.
Yeah.
I try because because we are being affected by past lives. We truly are. And in fact, sometimes what I say is, hey, you know what? You're even affected until you get over it. You're even affected by the past life of your grandmother on your mother's side of your family. And you never thought about that. Because you were growing as an egg in the ovary of your mother, who was growing in her mother's womb, your grandmother. And that all happened 3 months after your mother started gestating in that womb. So you literally have been sprinkled with the experiences of your mother's mother for all of that time. And you've been sprinkled by your mother's experiences because that egg was carried in her womb until it became the zygote that created you. So please don't tell me that the past can't matter. And that the past can't affect us, and that the past can't have some effect on the operating system of us.
Yeah, and then you can go into culture, and you can go into the community, the culture.
Right.
I mean, it goes
on and on and on. So.
And if you believe we're all one, then we literally have everything.
Right.
From everywhere, every possibility.
Right.
That can influence us.
And then we could go to the place of, just as in The Secret, the law of oneness is operating here. And just because you don't believe that it's operating here doesn't mean that it's not. Mm-hmm. And doesn't mean that it's not affecting you. Anyway, I'll go there in a second. So the completion of this thought would be that the trespass, we're in the trespass. And so this conflict, this trespass that's been left unhealed, this trespass that's still not understood or forgiven, it's still being judged and it's left unreconciled. And so what we do not know and what we cannot see is that we are lost. We are lost as we are allowing our choices to be governed from that place, as we are struggling to find the courage to take that risk. We don't take the risks that we really want to take and that we really need to take, those risks that really will nourish our soul. We only take the tiniest little risks with the amount of courage that we can find from the battles that we've waged in this war, because the inner security is in the hands of that person. It's in the hands of that man that raped me at six. It's in the hands of that father that screamed at me. They have the power over the healing of me. They have the power. And so I wait. I amass the courage and I wait for them to return to me to make that better. Think about that in the I wait for the murderer to return to me to make that better, the rapist to return to me to make that better, to say the apologies, to make those apologies, to get down on his knees and beg my forgiveness. I wait for that. And I wait and I battle and I create wars and I grab for courage and I am lost. And I am lost because I do not see. We do not see that the power is within us to heal ourselves. The power isn't there. We delude ourselves into thinking that because that got taken from us in that experience through our own judgment and our own inability to reconcile it, to join forces of light and dark within ourselves, to make peace with it, because of our inability to make peace with it at 3, 4, 5, 7, 10, 12, 15, 25 years of age, because of our inability to make peace with that, they have the power. And because we don't know how to make peace with that, and because we don't know how to reconcile, that's my favorite word this year, reconciliation. It's my favorite word. When I got it explained to me in the spiritual context of what it meant, I went, oh, I was going to say, oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow, what a word. To reconcile something, to weave and to braid the light and the dark, the good and the evil, to reconcile something. You can't reconcile something with judgment. Mm. There is no judgment in a reconciliation piece. It is the joining of the forces of darkness and light inside of you to make peace with something, to recognize that there was no one to blame, that there were things for both sides to learn, that both sides were innocent and guilty all at the same time, that both sides need to apologize to each other. And that you don't need to wait for the apology to come from another. You can apologize to that person.
Because?
Because that was a co-creation experience between the two of you. No matter how much you want to say anything else, it's not the case. When you come together in an experience that pushes buttons, it's always a co-creation between two souls or more. Buttons being pushed for the benefit of all involved. Sometimes you're in that co-creation as the victim. Sometimes you're in that co-creation as the perpetrator, as the abuser. Sometimes you're in that co-creation as the observer. And so it's interesting that Greg Braden, love this man, if you ever get a chance to speak with him or see him speak, that'd be cool if you got a chance to speak with him. He has been quoted many times in saying, it is our responsibility in our healing process to forgive, to find forgiveness and make peace with the victim within us, the perpetrator, the murderer, the abuser within us, and the observer. Mm-hmm. That all three deserve our forgiveness, deserve our compassion, deserve our understanding. And when I see it from that light, and when I really get it, and when this beautiful word called reconciliation is introduced to me, God bless this woman, Virginia Martin, who I will say her name here. Virginia Martin, I love you. I do, too. It kind of gives me a new way of understanding karma. Hmm. Understanding that I've put myself in all of these different positions. I've walked in all of these shoes so that I could understand, so that I could know, so I could know what it feels like to have the gun pointed at my head, so I could understand what I maybe didn't understand when I was pointing the gun at another, which is how much that hurt. And how deeply that hurt to be on the other side of that gun. And so I could be the observer of both experiences, but you can only be the observer when you're open to flying above something and looking at it with no judgment and looking at it with not a child's mind. A child's mind is the mind of good and evil. Child's mind, it's all light and dark and it's all separate. And mommy, you're good today because you gave me a candy. And mommy, you're evil today because you're not taking me to the movie. Not from a child's mind, but from the discerning mind of the more spiritually evolved person, the adult mind, the mind that sees the varying shades of gray and that really recognizes the truth that it's all divine, that it's all divine. It all has happened for good reason. It all has happened for learning. It has all happened so that I could be and they could be on two ends of the sword, so that we could feel and know. Because I think we're trying to figure out, this is just my hypothesis, I think we're trying to figure out, how do we be here? How do we exist here? How do we share as souls in these bodies with each other? How do we share with this body? How do we share with this ego? That brings up another interesting point, maybe for another day. It's very cool. How do we share with this ego? How does this soul share with this ego? and do no harm? How do we do that and do no harm?
Can we?
Yes. Yes, and I think that's what we're doing. We're bumping up against each other. We're hurting each other and then going, oh, I did harm. I didn't see that. I didn't even see that that would do harm. I didn't even know how much harm that did until I sat on the other end of that. And as you sit on the other end of that and feel the intensity of the amount of harm that you did in this lifetime or another, you can go, I don't want to do that anymore to anybody, not to myself or anyone else. And so the soul has learned. And so the soul has grown. And so the soul doesn't do that anymore. And so I think on some level, that's kind of what we're doing. We're bumping up against each other. We're banging up against each other. And we're trying to figure it out. How do we share power? How do we share power and not do harm? How do we share power and not lose ourselves? I'm still trying to figure that one out. How to share power and not lose myself. How to share power in my relationship with a man. And how to share power in my marriage and not lose myself. And how to share power in all, with my clients and not overpower. And not dominate. How to share power equally. Like we're all in that struggle. And so I really do think at the end of the day, that's what we're doing. And that's why these trespasses have happened against us, so that we can learn. We can learn what that feels like. So if you don't mind, I'll give you an example, because I thought in my office it was a really cool example. It happened about a week ago, and it was just like, oh, yeah. We both came to that place, and it was like, yeah, that's very neat. So this woman comes in and she's got this real throat issue happening, like her throat is closing, anxiety attacks happening. And okay, it's going to be a stretch for some people that don't believe in past lives. I'm sorry, I'll do my best. But what I could see is that I went right through this life. And what I could see for her was that this started about 8 lifetimes ago for her. This was a soul piece unreconciled that began about 8 lifetimes ago, where she was murdered by a man who wrapped his hands around her throat and strangled and choked and asphyxiated her and took her last breath. And she left the body, the soul left the body, before the soul could ever know in that lifetime, figuring out a way to get those hands off her throat.
Right.
So the soul left the body with the experience and the imprint that it didn't have the power to stop that. That it didn't have the power to stop the asphyxiation and the choking. And didn't have the power to stop that attack. So what came through guides and angels and forces that were helping us that day was that she had literally gone through 5 or 6 lifetimes of this dance of experiences where attack would come and her throat would be taken over and the attack would come, and it wasn't necessarily hands. In one lifetime, I saw a noose. I saw a noose wrapped around her neck. And she passes out of this life having that experience.
That one's much harder to get out of than hands.
And it really is the experience over and over and over again of, I can't get out of this. I don't have the power to get out of this. It's the operating experience and decision made from this life. I can't, I have no power to do this. I'm helpless to do this. What I was able to show her is, in this life, I said, there are no hands. There are no hands wrapped around you. There is no noose around your neck. There is no murderer. You are the murderer. Through your anxiety attacks and what you have now come to believe and accept will happen which is the attack will happen. Your body is already starting to prepare for the attack that is going to happen, and it inevitably will happen. And you have become the murderer. You are wrapping your hands around your own throat, and you are choking and asphyxiating yourself. Mm-hmm. There is no one else doing that in this life. You are doing it on autopilot. Your mind is doing it. It is doing it because it expects that this is the way that this is going to happen and the way that you always die. But now you're not going to die at the hands of anyone else. This is the big change you're making in this life. I'm not going to die at the hands of anyone else. I'm going to die at my own hands. Mm-hmm. And she really got it. And she looks at me, and her eyes are wide open, and she goes, I get it. I'm the victim. And I'm the murderer. And I'm the observer. I'm all of it. Mm-hmm. And she says, I'm the observer because I'm standing here with you, looking at this, seeing this so clearly, and I'm not judging. And for the first time, I'm not judging myself as the victim. And for the first time, I'm not judging the people that have created these anxiety attacks for me, I've been thinking. For the first time, I'm sitting here, not judging it, observing it, and seeing myself as both. She said, that's really cool.
Very cool.
And I said, that's why you put yourself in this place. Because this was going to be the life where you were going to give yourself the opportunity to finally reconcile this pain that your soul has been creating from. And landing on this planet and imprisoning, you've been imprisoning this soul in only creating in this way on this earth. Always dying this same way, always having this same experience. So I said to her, close your eyes and picture this. Picture the hands of that murderer from 8 lifetimes ago choking your throat. And picture your hands in this lifetime joining those hands that are his hands so that they become one. Choking your throat. And now pull them away from your throat and apologize to yourself.
Wow.
You are no longer waiting for that apology. You don't have to. You've become the murderer. And accept your apology.
Powerful.
She totally saw it. Mm-hmm. It was a very, very cool, powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
To join the evil that she had been judging with the light within her. And to start the process of freeing herself from not only that judgment, from that experience that has been governing how she was creating and showing up and how her soul and how she was asking, the only way that she was asking her soul to show up and the only way that she was asking her soul to die and have the experience of death in this life. It was very neat.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, trespasses.
Trespasses.
Unreconciled. They harm.
Yes.
They do harm. They imprison us. They sentence us. It's kind of like that Lord's Prayer.
Mm-hmm. Every time you say that.
Against us. Yeah. Now I get it. Now when I hear it, it has meaning. Now I understand it. And it's even in that first section, it's like a walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. It's like, because I will be okay no matter what happens. you are with me. You are with me. I have that inner security. I know that you are with me. I have that faith. I have that trust. I know I'm not alone. See, when you have a trespass unreconciled, there's got to be some issue there with whatever you might call that God, whatever you might call that force that's supposed to be looking after me that day, watching over me that day. Hello, where were you that day?
Yeah.
And it's really kind of interesting to go, well, that force was there that day, watching over you, looking after you, giving you the opportunity to reconcile a trespass against you from another life, another time, or from this one that had gone unreconciled, unhealed, and was a festering wound inside governing your decisions and your life as creator. But you couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So you blamed. And you saw it as doing harm because you didn't see. And so, I mean, I don't belong to any religion. I seem to like to pick these little pieces from all of these different faiths. It's like I kind of like the way I got brought up now. It's difficult sometimes because I don't feel like I can share a lot of how I feel about my connection to this thing called God with my family. To be brought up faithless. But in the same instance, my parents always said, we want you to have the opportunity to find that connection to that you're calling God, your way, and in the places that you want to find it.
Mm-hmm.
So walking in a kind of a faithless world that I walk in gives me the opportunity to walk into all these places and find the jewels. And there really are jewels in these places. In fact, one of them, and I don't even know if I'm going to have time to share it with you, is the jewel that Virginia Martin shared with me that comes out of the Anglican Church. She calls it the repentance cycle.
Yeah, go ahead.
And it is exactly that, right? It's exactly what I've already walked you through, this honoring of the observer, and it's this honoring of the perpetrator, and it's honoring of the victim, and it's really about apologizing. It's really about... don't wait for the apology to come from another when you're in that dynamic with another who is doing harm or who is hurting or who is pulling or pushing your buttons. It's to honor this concept that you are needing in this moment to be the observer of your own pain, the observer of your own stuff, your own beliefs, your own decisions inside of you that you have not been able to see are toxic to you.
Mm-hmm.
And to then recognize that this person that has so kindly put on this costume today to be in this altercation with you is your friend. They wear a villain costume, but they're your friend.
And that's the mirror.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's kind of like that Jesus piece when he doesn't have a problem sitting in the presence of his enemies. You know, sit at this table with your enemies because he gets it. There are none. There are no enemies. They're all your friends. You just have to get to a place where you can accept it's all divine. So for about the last 3 years to even get myself to this place, the mantra, like it's almost an everyday event. In fact, there are students that go, I know it's all divine. And there are clients that come in and they throw their coats and they go, okay, well, I've just had this big fight with my husband and he's leaving me for what? And I know what you're going to say, it's all divine, but I'll tell you, I'm pissed. So get me a tea and tell me why.
Funny.
Because I can't see it.
Right.
I can't see it the way you see it. And so I think that clients come a lot of the time because they can't see it the way I see it. And it's that forgive them for what they cannot see.
So I know you spend the time focused on yourself. But is there validation in being able to forgive that person and to be grateful for the experience that they offered you to grow?
Sure.
Right.
Is there value in that? Huge value in that. When I let go of that, it's amazing what happens in my world. It's amazing what shifts in the people that I have wanted to shift, that I've wanted to see change, when I make that change. The only way I can describe it is to say, when I make that change inside of me instead of trying to change them, right. When I actually do that piece for myself, they get to change their costumes. They get to go backstage, take off the villain costume, put on the costume that looks oh so much better for them and in nicer colors, and come back out on my stage and play a completely different role, because I have changed my energy dynamic to them and to everyone around me. It's my energy that's changed, and people are reading my energy. Every day we're reading people's energy and showing us how we are to behave. We're reading it and we're behaving accordingly. So when I shift me, they get to change costume. But one of the reasons why I think people don't want to go here, and why I haven't wanted to go here sometimes, is because there's a fear that if I make this change, I'm going to be alone.
Oh, yeah.
The stage is going to change. Somehow I know that the stage is going to change. And they're going to go backstage. And instead of changing their costume, they're walking out the back door because we're done. We're done. Contracts fulfilled and we're done. And I don't want us to be done. And I don't trust or have faith that they're going to want to be with me in this new way, playing with me in this new way, so I don't change. It's kind of Carolyn Meese in her Why People Don't Heal and How They Can. One of the five myths that she points out is that concept that people don't because they don't want to be alone.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah. So if I go here, this repentance cycle, and walk you through it for fun, the way it was presented to me was the three A's. The repentance cycle is the three A's. First, you acknowledge. You acknowledge the wrongdoing. You acknowledge your part. You take responsibility for your part. You stop blaming. You take responsibility for your part. You acknowledge this person is your mirror. You acknowledge. Secondly, you apologize. And thirdly, and I think maybe almost most importantly, you leave the making of the amends, if there are any amends to be made, to your angels. To your angels, to your guides, and to the divine. Because when we get into the making of the amends piece, oh my God, we pay too high a price. We pay no price at all. We don't even know where to, we take on too much. We try to, we feel so guilty that it's just best to say, Divine, you take care of that for me. If there are amends to be made, if the apology is not enough to this person, then you take care of that. And you take care of how those amends are going to be made. So that when we come back together again, it will happen divinely. And it won't hurt. And the price won't be too much. And it all worked beautifully. And in the making of amends, I'll be operating in my glory, and they'll be receiving with an open heart, and I'll be giving to them what is coming from my heart and what is really truly me. And if I leave it up to you, that's the way it's all going to work. And if I leave it up to me, it'll be burden after burden after burden, and the price will never get paid. Right? So I think that amends piece is kind of, it's the surrender to that divine to take care of that piece, because I got to get out of my way.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes like to acknowledge that this wrong has been done. So I acknowledge now that through my need to observe my own pain, through my need to observe myself as the abuser, from my need to observe my own sense of powerlessness, how powerless I have felt, how helpless I have felt, what a victim I have felt in relationships, from my need to observe those feelings that are my own feelings.
Even the perpetrator is powerless.
Yes. I apologize to you.
So we're not talking that you actually have to say it to the person's face.
No. Mm-hmm. Because to say it to the person's face, they'd go, what are you talking about? It's really, this is about you and you. It's about you recognizing the value of this person, stopping the blame of this person, starting to see this person as your friend, not your enemy, as your ally, as a soul who is there to help and aid you. Sometimes it's to say, I acknowledge now that through my need to observe my own capacity to be just like them, I apologize. From my capacity to have been just like them in the past, I must have that capacity to be just like them in the past. I might not remember it. It might not be from this life, but if it's here in my face, then I must have had the capacity to be just like that in the past. And so from my capacity to be just like that in the past, I apologize to you, because you wouldn't be in my face operating like this if I hadn't walked that path in another life and potentially even maybe hurt you by walking that path. So I apologize. I like to, although this is not something that was ever given to me through this, what Virginia Martin had shared with me that came out of the Anglican Church, I felt that there was something more that needed to be done than just to apologize. That what I wanted to do, what my heart wanted to do when I really got this piece, when I really got it, my heart wanted to say thank you. Wanted to move into a place of gratitude. Really wanted not only to say thank you, but to say to these angels that were going to deliver these apologies on my behalf and make amends on my behalf and show me amends that needed to be made if I was to do those. I wanted to send blessings to these people, to these souls in this lifetime or another. Gratitude. And so that's what I asked the angels to do and the divine to do. And I surrender that, is not just to ask them to help to deliver those apologies. So that sometimes it's really real. Sometimes those people that I know that I've had issue with, I just can feel it. They're right back in my energy field. And it's not that I am saying I'm sorry to them. It's that they're back there and amends are being made. There are kindnesses that I'm bestowing upon them and that I want to bestow upon them, whether it's the extra half hour in my session or whether it's just an oil or just a little flower essence that I say, and they say, well, what do I owe you for that? Nothing. And it feels right to say nothing. Nothing. You owe me nothing. And it's like, and I know when they walk out of my office that I just have this sense, well, that was cool. I made amends, didn't I? I made amends. There was no I'm sorry. There was no I apologize. It's also interesting that when I test it energetically, there is not the same power to the words I'm sorry as there are to the words I apologize. Mm. And if you actually say both inside of yourself and you're a feeling person and a sensing person rather than a senseless person, people laugh when I say that, but it's just some people have that ability to sense subtle energies within them and some people don't, and the ones that don't are senseless. If you are a sensing person, then when you say the words, I'm sorry, like try it, I'm sorry, and feel that, and feel how that flows down you as you say it. And now say, I apologize. And what's the difference of the two? How does one feel versus the other?
Sorry seems to have still an emotional type of a connection to it. Like there's still a
does it not also feel inside of you shallower? Like it's that I'm sorry feels
because
like
we've
it gets
said it so many times and it doesn't have the same.
It doesn't get as far. As I apologize, which flows all the way through you, right down to your feet into the ground. Like it's an amazing feeling. I apologize. And I think that's what is, you know, when you say, oh, just apologize and mean it.
Right.
So it's kind of like with those apologies, that's what I wanted to send. Please send my blessings. Please send my blessings and my thank yous. And as I say that, it feels really good because it's like my heart just opens and it's just gratitude. It's just thank you. Thank you. I hold nothing against you. I'm done with this. I am so done with this. My heart is open. I get it. And until you can come to that feeling with this, you're not done. You got to go back and do it again. You haven't found the right words for the acknowledgement part.
Yeah.
You just haven't found the words that mean something to you. Because when you found the words for the acknowledgement part that mean something, and you've said the I'm sorry through the I apologize, and it's gone right down to the ground, then something's just been lifted. And there's nothing left there but gratitude. And it's interesting, mm-hmm. Candace Blakely, a long time ago, founder of New Decision Therapy, she was the one that first said that to me. She said, you know that you're done. You know that you're done with this work. She meant her work. When there's nothing but gratitude in your heart. When you've got nothing but thank you to say. And nothing but thank you that you want to say to everybody that has hurt you, kicked you, smited you, bit you, cursed you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I needed to observe that.
Well, Tracy, for someone who was worried about not... Well, no, actually, you weren't really worried about not having enough to say, I don't think.
Well, I don't know. I was worried about a few things, though.
I know, which is quite sweet. I would love to have you come back because I think... you have a great way of speaking, and you have some great information that people need to hear. So,
I'd love to come back.
Great. Good.
I'd love to come back.
Good.
Yeah,
that we've finally gotten you here, which was taking a little bit of time.
It was fun, though.
It was. All right. So, that's it for this week. And actually, we'll be back on Monday on our regular schedule. And we'll see you then.